Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 174.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, Richard Ryerson here. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Hey, keep those emails coming. I love hearing from you. Thanks for all the support, all the fans out there. If you got a question about leadership, if you're having a leadership challenge, let me hear about it. I love to answer your questions. I might even answer it on the air if it's a pertinent one I think the whole audience can benefit from. But let me hear from you. I love the support that you're giving to me. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a rating and review. It does so much for the support and the visibility. That's all I ask for you, to listen to this great free content. And again, thank you for your support. Hey, I want to introduce my brand new partners to the show, 99 Designs. And when I was starting out on this entrepreneur path, I stressed about the graphic design element, the web design elements. You know, I want to encourage you to go check out 99 Designs, because working with an individual graphic designer can be good, but it has its limitations. You know, timing is one thing. If you want dozens of designs to choose from in just 7 days, well, I encourage you to visit 99designs.com/leadership and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. Go check them out. Well, so excited to have on the show today Tom Dowd. He's also known as Transformation Tom. He's a graduate of the University of Delaware with a communication degree concentrating on interpersonal and organizational communication. Tom is a prize-winning speaker, an award-winning and Amazon best-selling author, trainer, coach, and he's a radio host too, all spurred by his need to be more than a painfully shy and introverted individual on a roller coaster ride of success. Tom, welcome to the Dose of Leadership Podcast.
Oh, Richard, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
You know, I always appreciate and love talking with guys. I was reading your full-length bio early this morning, you know, and it sounds like you had a similar kind of path as me, kind of, you know, going on that corporate path, and you're just kind of finding out, hey, there's got to be something more to life than just kind of punching the clock and kind of a search for significance. Anyway, that's kind of what I gathered out of pulling out of your bio. Did I kind of capture the essence of that? I mean, tell me a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, you did, and there's a couple parts that are in there. One, I didn't make the choice. It was made for me.
That's right. You're actually right.
On June 6th of 2013, a day I affectionately like to call D-Day or Displacement Day, I lost my job due to cost cuts. And so I had been for many years teaching people on the side. I have a side business on resume writing, interviewing, networking, communication effectiveness, really telling people that they can do more than just survive their job. They can thrive in it. And so I all of a sudden lost my job. And instead of panicking, I actually somehow got a clear set of mindset, and I was able to ask the question, well, did it have anything to do with my performance? And this person, who I had only met once before on the phone, said, no, it didn't. And from that point forward, I knew that it wasn't personal. It was a business decision. And from there, I continued to do my self-interest of teaching people how to find a job while I was looking for my own. And I was going from Maine down to Boston to job-seeking groups and networking groups. And all of a sudden, people were having, where I thought I was having credibility, people were sharing these deeper conversations that they wouldn't have with other speakers because I was going through it with them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where the newest book came from, Displacement Day, when my job was looking for a job. And there's so many things that we can talk about, but there are so many things in there that are lessons learned on my journey that people shared with me. Part of it was the mindset, but part of it was really just looking down to say, what do you really want? And so I asked myself the question, do I still want to be in the corporate world? Do I want to be a speaker, a trainer, a coach, an author? And by the way, my answer was yes to all of them.
Right, yeah.
And so the one thing that was different in what you chose to do is I chose to go back to the corporate world, but I was very concentrated on where I was looking and how I was doing it. And through networking, which is a very powerful thing, by the way, where research will tell you 85% of all people get their job because of networking, I landed in a corporation that is fantastic to its people, fantastic to its customers, a great culture. And I'm working for an individual that not only supports what I'm doing on the side, he actually encourages it. And it's part of the corporate culture that just permeates through. If you can teach others to be better and develop them, bring it on. And so I've actually had the best of all worlds. And even further to that is I accepted the job knowing I'd have to commute an hour and 40 minutes each day.
Oh, wow.
And I landed, I flew down to the headquarters for the very first day, talked to my boss, and I said, so through my research, I understand this company's pretty progressive. And he said, yeah, we are. And I said, well, what are your thoughts about working remotely periodically? And he said, I don't care where you work, just get the job done. And I found an office that's a 7-minute walk from my house.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so everything always works out for them. People say it works out for the best, and it does when you put the right effort in.
Well, you know, I'm still in the corporate arena with you as well, you know, and I was forced out into when I got furloughed from American Airlines and I got laid off after September 11th. And so we're a lot more familiar than you think. I'm interested when you said that you got a boss that supports it. I have one too. But even as of fresh of today, there are some that do and some that don't. And there's some that almost feel almost, I don't know if the word threatens the right word, but it's almost like when I've talked about leadership and how it is, some people feel threatened is the best word for it. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there are people that are on a power kick. There are people that just want that lead through fear. And it's funny because, you know, there are so many different styles. In my first book, The Transformation of a Doubting Thomas, Growing from a Cynic to a Professional in the Corporate World, talks about my first 18 years in the corporate world. And it was one of those, I was truly cynical.
Yeah.
I was defensive. It was never my fault. It was never my problem. And I didn't take the feedback, these gifts that were being handed to me. Well, my company, which was 28,000 people at the time, turned into 300,000 overnight. We were taken over. And I had a choice to make, and most of it had to do with my attitude. And that attitude was, you know, I can get lost in what's going on here and hope that no one finds me amongst these 300,000 people. I can stop being on this roller coaster ride and start to proactively take control of my career, which I did. And so I found a mentor. I became a mentor. I joined Toastmasters International because I needed to work on my communication skills and confidence level. And so the reason I share this story with you is part of that self-awareness was to learn to go with the flow, learn to adapt to others, and learn to work with people. You can't there are these stories of gather up all the people that are bothering you and let me get rid of them for you. It isn't going to happen.
Right, exactly.
but it's how I dealt with people. And being painfully shy and introverted, I really didn't know how to deal with people, but I learned. And you learn by listening. You learn by asking questions. You learn by asking the question, not what's in it for me, but what's in it for them. And and all of a sudden I started to find success when I started to build relationships. So to come back to your original points, I used to blame everything on my managers, and there were people who challenged me. There were people who may be threatening of this, but what I hold myself accountable for is to teach them what benefits it can give to the company, it can give to them. And some of those benefits are I've become an extraordinary time manager because I have to be. And so my boss knows that I airtime management tips with people who might be struggling. I've become a much better communicator because of my efforts. And I've learned how to influence, have the power and influence and persuasion skills that I didn't have many years ago because of my work with people. So when people who may even be skeptical or threatened by it, they need to understand what I can bring to them. And I can help them. I can help the people that they work with. And there's still going to be some people that are still turned off by it. But you know, when they know where my priorities are my full-time job. When they know that, you know, I'm not going to go off and misrepresent the company in any which way, and more importantly, that my work, my primary work, is getting done. At the end of the day, I think most people end up turning towards the right way with it.
Yeah, I love how you said you were introverted. I classified myself, and I still consider myself an introverted leader. You know, I was leading a mastermind group last week, and we were talking about, you know, how like when you throw people into a brand new setting, say it could be, hey, we need, I don't know, you're at the parent, your kid's little league team, and someone needs to be the snack Nazi, you know what I mean? And so there's always that type A gregarious person that kind of takes control of the room. And I always contend and argue that that person isn't always necessarily the best leader. And I know my introversion has caused me to, it's taken a lot longer for people to kind of, I guess, know, like, and trust me, you know. And I think so sometimes that introversion has drove me crazy, but and when I look back on it, I actually think it's kind of a strength. What is your take on that?
Well, there's a couple things that are in there. First, the loudest person in the room isn't always the best leader. When it comes to, you know, one of the things that I learned, because I moved 8 times as a kid, and then when I started working, I had, over my first 23 years in working, I averaged 18 months of position. So I was constantly on the go, constantly in new environments, and that adaptability actually made me stronger. And the reason I bring that up is, as a painfully shy and introverted, and yes, I'm still in the present tense as well, consider myself shy, is you learn that it's okay. Because
right.
you think about it, it's this characteristic that it's thought about as negative, and you get these negative connotations that are there. But what I started to figure out over time is I wasn't the most boisterous, but I was paying attention, and I was listening to what people had to say, and I was becoming intuitive, and all of a sudden people started to migrate to me because they knew I'd have a real conversation with them. I wasn't going to talk at them. I wasn't going to talk over them. I was just going to sit and listen to them. And it became, again, back to what's in it for them. They had an ear, and they can talk. We can communicate. And all of a sudden, I was, as a better listener, I was becoming a better business partner. And all of a sudden, they start to say, well, Tom, what's your opinion? So when I did say something, it was considered important. And so I started to see that as a strength of I stopped talking over people. I became a better listener. I saw the power of just building these relationships. And so it became a strength of mine and was no longer a concern. Now, what I had to work on was my confidence. And I was a communication major in college, but I was told for 18 years on the job in my performance appraisals that I couldn't communicate. And it had to do with being shy. You just throw out the first thought that comes to mind and hope that it just goes away. Or you speak over people and you don't stop talking until you're done with your thought, and then you just, you know, hope no one ever responds or retorts.
Right.
and so it was deemed as poor communication, but in reality, it had everything to do with confidence. And that's where I think the Toastmasters training, and for those that don't know what Toastmasters is, it's a group of 300,000 people worldwide that deals with public speaking and communication effectiveness and leadership. And it, all of a sudden, I realized I could communicate. I just needed the confidence to do it.
Right.
And you can be confident and shy, and that's actually it is a strength.
Yeah, you know, when I read it, reminds me of when you read from Jim Collins, and I've mentioned this several times on the show, but you read Jim Collins' chapter From Good to Great on Level 5 Leadership, where it's okay to be that kind of self, you know, that, you know, some of the great leaders are those self-effacing, humble. They're not necessarily the type A, larger-than-life John Wayne figures that we stereotypically associate with leadership. Hey, halfway through the show, I want to take some time out, just a brief moment, to talk about my partners at 99 Designs. You know, if you were like me in the beginning, I remember I was dreaming of a logo, a perfect website design, but I didn't know how to get started. I was worried about a budget. Well, that's where 99 Designs came in, and they can certainly help. 99 Designs is the world's largest graphic design marketplace, and it makes it easy for you to get a design that you love. Just go to their website, tell them about the design you need, and pick a price package that works for you. And that's where the fun really starts up. And this is what I loved about the process. Designers from all around the world will submit awesome designs, and you give them your feedback. And within a week, you get to pick out your favorite and be the proud owner of a gorgeous, unique new design. With thousands of designers at your fingertips, there's no limit to what you can get designed. I've used 99 Designs, and I love working with them and what they did for me. So what is it that you need? You can boost your brand's visibility with a t-shirt, drive more traffic with a sleek new banner ad or a landing page, whatever it is you need. Projects start at just $199, and your happiness is always 100% guaranteed. Visit 99designs.com/leadership, and you can get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free today. Go check them out. You know, and the question is, how do you become confident? So how did you do it? I mean, what are the tactics and the techniques to really build your confidence? How do you do it?
Well, you learn. I learned to be me. And I know that's easy to say, extremely hard to do, but when you're trying to, you're up against all these type A personalities, and everyone's trying to climb the corporate ladder, and so you start to make enemies that way, and you have people stabbing you in the back, and when you're taken over by a company, and you're all of a sudden go from 28 to 300,000 people, I had to take accountability for myself. And I gained confidence when I became aware of who I was and who I wanted to be. And so that's, you mentioned in the bio that I'm Transformation Tom. Well, Transformation Tom came about from this guy who didn't know who he was and who he wanted to be. He wanted to be successful. He just didn't know how to get there. And no, I don't always talk about myself in the third party. But yeah. Transformation Tom was, I had to figure out that I could make a difference. And so I learned about self-awareness, and I really started to do some self-assessments. And I found some mentors, people that would hit me square between the eyes. I became this mentor, and all of a sudden, this teacher was becoming the student. And I was learning from the people because I was learning how to communicate. I was learning to be a better listener. I was learning how to solve problems. And then the most important part of all was the belief that I could make a difference. And I really started to believe that I could do this. And that comes with the confidence. You start to build confidence when people you're talking to start to really listen, and you're starting to influence them, and you're starting to see this. And confidence comes with little pieces of success. And so the more actions I took, the more success I found. The more mistakes I made, and willingness to continue to take them on, the more success I found. And it was, my confidence went up because I wasn't trying to be the guy in the room that wins everyone over. I became the guy who simply just wanted to get the job done. I wanted to build strong relationships, which I wasn't doing earlier in my career. And I was gaining confidence in my own abilities. I wasn't gaining confidence because I hoped. I gained confidence because I was taking action. And the more mistakes I made, the more I learned, and I was okay with that. And those are the techniques that I started to do, is I started to be proactive about joining Toastmasters or reaching out to find a mentor. So those are the things, when you say, help, I need help, and ask for it, and all of a sudden you get it, you start to find success along with that confidence.
Yeah, you said so many great things there, and I think right from the get-go, and you hit it right on the head, this idea of authenticity. Stop trying to be somebody that you're not. And I know for me that was huge, because when I first joined the Marine Corps, and the people that really did resonate and that were ranked high when we ranked each other in these peer evaluations, it was always the type A gregarious, you know, stereotypical, hey, I'm a Marine, look at me. And what was interesting as the 6 months went on in this infantry school before I went to flight school is there was a shift. And the guys like myself who were more quiet, and to your point, we kind of it flipped, and the larger than life gregarious, what I found a lot of times, that's an insecurity. Someone's covering an insecurity with that kind of bravado. And I don't know, I think it's interesting, and there's a time and place for that kind of type A mentality, and some people gravitate towards it. But I love how you said, especially for the introverted leaders out there, the moment you stop trying to be somebody that you're not, there's a great freedom that's involved, and that's where a natural, authentic confidence kind of erupts.
And I would say to the shy folks out there, there's plenty of them, is we all have a story to tell.
Yeah, I love that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm okay getting up on a stage and speaking to one person or thousands of people is because I learned that my message resonated with people, or that I found a way to relate it to people. And when you start to have real conversations and you start to relate conversations, and it's no longer about you, it's about other people in your audience, you continue to gain that confidence. And I would just tell people is figure out what your story is and figure out what your message is, and you'll learn to share it. You will. And people would want to listen to it.
Great advice. I can't agree with you more. I mean, finding that everybody does have a story, and that you do matter. And it's not about ego either. It's not about highlighting yourself, but everybody does have a story. There is kind of an epidemic of people feeling like, I just don't seem to really matter in this world. And that is so far from the truth. There's so many great stories out there. And that's why I love doing this show, because I love hearing people's stories. You know, I guess if somebody could say, okay, that's fine, I'm bought into what you're saying, Tom, about I'm introverted, I'm shy, I want to change my life, but at some point, it's very scary to go join Toastmasters, it's very scary to get up and stand in front of a group of people, and at some point, you're going to have to come and slay the fear dragon head on. how do you do that?
Well, you just nailed my second book. My second book is From Fear to Success, A Practical Public Speaking Guide. And the premise in there is that we are surrounded by public speaking opportunities. And so if you think about it, we just talked a little bit about the confidence. And that confidence will take you to different, more places than you would have ever believed. And the fear we have may not be related to communication skills, it may actually be related to confidence.
Yeah.
And we think about public speaking. You say public speaking, the first thought that comes to mind is probably hundreds of people out in front of you while you're up on a stage. But public speaking is having a conversation with someone.
Right.
And share messages. And the one-on-one conversation, being painfully shy and introverted, was just as hard to me as speaking to 100 people. So I had to learn to speak to that one person. And so it became, how do you have that conversation with one person? If they buy in, then maybe another 100 people behind them might. And so when I'm up on stage now, I'm talking to one person at a time, regardless of how many people are out there. But public speaking is more than just that microphone or that lectern. And the other thing is the ability to speak publicly. It's not as hard as you think. And so I would have these jitters and these shakes, and I have this Irish heritage, so I had the red skin. You know, I would get flushed, and it would come from my neck all the way up to my face and through my ears. And the first thing that came to mind every time I had to get into some type of public speaking situation, every single time, was, uh-oh, here it comes again. And so I would feel the heat. And what did that heat do? That took my mind. And it, all of a sudden, my mind is spinning, saying, okay, what can I do to avoid this, or just go away, or whatever it might be. And that message I worked so hard to craft became secondary. And so some of the things I taught myself through public speaking was the message is the most important thing. Get that message out to the audience that's out there. And so until I actually speak about becoming flushed, I don't even think about it anymore. I could be purple for all I care, but that's irrelevant to the message that I'm sending. And so for those that are actually on the spectrum of this, yeah, people that are just say, I'm too afraid to get up on stage, you also have the other side of the spectrum that say, I don't need your help. I can, I can publicly speak.
Right.
And those are the people that probably need it the most because they're in denial.
Yep.
But, I mean, to come back to your original question is, just realize that it is a skill. And it is a skill that can be honed and refined, and regardless of how well we think we can speak. And that's why I wrote my book about it, these easily digestible chapters that say, I can read it today and a year from now read that same chapter, and it's going to have a different meaning to me because I'm at a different maturity level. We're all working towards that goal of becoming better. Take whatever you feel can help to improve your public speaking, whether it's speaking in front of a mirror, a video camera, practicing your communication while you're driving in the car, talking to your dog, joining Toastmasters, whatever it may be, find a coach to do it. You can improve it. And those that do, and I spent an hour with someone a couple weeks ago in an individual coaching session, and she said, I can sit here and talk to you all day while I'm sitting. But as soon as I asked her to stand up and give me a two-minute elevator speech about herself, she panicked. And so she had instantly convinced herself, self-defeating thoughts said, you know what? I can't do this, so I won't. And I had her stand up and read directly off of her paper to me. And she said, okay. I mean, maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought. I said, okay. Now, read from it, but look up periodically. And she did that. And then I said, okay, now just talk to me about the notes. They don't have to be verbatim. Just talk to me about the notes. And she did. So now she's in the third or fourth iteration of this thing, and her comfort level was greater. And that's part of the secret. And by the way, it's not really a secret. The more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to be. And your goal is to knock off each little edge of fear one piece at a time, and all of a sudden your confidence is going to go through the roof.
Well, you know, you said so many great things about, and I remember, I mean, we've all heard the statistic that more people actually fear speaking than dying. And I remember my first speech class, and it was petrifying. But the more that I have done it, it's become, like you said, and I think the idea of, like, it's about getting the message across. If you focus on that, that really does take a lot of the pressure off, or at least a lot of the internal fear about what are they going to think about me? Because I guess really at the root of it is fear, and the fear of, I guess, rejection, failure, looking silly. And then it's kind of like a psychosomatic chain reaction once you start thinking about it. So the more that you can just focus on the message, the better that it is. And it is such a mental battle. But just the overall, even just not even taking about the public speaking piece, but the overcoming the fear piece. I mean, what you said, the tactics and the strategy you're using to get over the fear of public speaking really gets at the heart and resonates how to get over any fear of trying something new, really. I mean, it's the same tactics. And so it's almost like it's what I heard from that answer is less about trying to eliminate the fear. Like you said, you could be purple in the face. It's actually, you get to the point, and I'm curious if you feel this way, that if the fear is actually, when you're feeling it, you're so used to it now, it's almost like it's a good sign. Yeah, I know what this is all about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I started asking my question to myself of, is it really fear?
Yeah.
So I've been involved in speech competitions, and I've been fortunate enough to be one speech away from the world semifinals a couple times. Toastmasters has these world finals. And so I had some decent success, and I've had some mentors that taught me along the way. In the very first speech contest I was in, I finished in third place out of three people. And I was devastated. But the first two people couldn't move on to the next level, so I got to move on. And so there I was, moving up in competition, probably not even deserving it. And I was stiff as a board the first time. So someone gave me feedback and said, hey, Tom, you know, you should probably use the stage a little bit more. So I used it from left to right, right to left to right, right to left, right. And I was all over that stage. And I finished in second place, so I got to advance on. And the person said to me, "Is all right, maybe, Tom, you want to have some useful energy, you know, do something on stage and have purpose behind your movement." But by moving back and forth all of a sudden, I realized it was this excitement in getting the message out, and I was holding my passion in by standing stiff as a board.
Yeah.
And so I continued to ask myself, is it really fear or is it excitement in trying to get the message out? And I realized some of it was fear. I'm sure some of it was panic somewhere along the line. But it has turned into this, I can't wait to send my message. And maybe that it's adrenaline now.
Yeah.
And not fear.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that. And it's, well, even when you talk to actors and who've been on, they feel the same thing, you know, for years. You know, I remember watching an interview with Henry Fonda, and he used to throw up, you know, before he'd go on the stage, and he'd been doing it for, you know, 50 years he'd been acting, but then he'd throw up before, and so maybe it's, I don't know, it's just, but you know, that's...
But you came back, you asked a point, though, you said, or you made the point of maybe, you know, am I going to embarrass myself, or should I even be up here on stage? You know, I know that there are these positive thoughts that you want to have, but you have to really be, you visualize your own success, and that's part of the mental hurdle you have to go over. Think of the Olympic skiers. You know, you're seeing them on TV, and you watch them with their eyes closed and their hands moving in the direction of the trail. They visualize their own winning of the gold medal. And it's the same thing in speaking. You have to not only practice, you have to believe in your message, and you have to believe the audience is there to listen to your message and really truly buy into that yourself. And all of a sudden, you start to realize that you're visualizing your own success, and your confidence is going to skyrocket.
Yeah, I love that. The visualization technique is so powerful. I had a rowing coach in college that taught us that first. We used to have it sit down in real time, go through the race, as we laid there on the gym floor and visualized the entire race. And it pays huge dividends to do that. And same thing with flying. When you learn how to fly, you visualize how the flight's going to go and what you're doing. It's a great mental exercise. I can't agree with you more. You know, you got so many lessons learned. I love this kind of story about your transformation and how you went kind of from this shy guy to this guy who's confident, he's speaking, he's coaching, he's talking about leadership, talking about how to find a job in tough economic times. I mean, if you had a list of all your lessons learned, what would be maybe your top three?
We don't have enough time on the show, but and you're limiting me to three. Actually, let's stick with the most recent, and that's the looking for a job. When I lost my job and I had to put myself into this mental state, and all those lessons turned into the most recent book, Displacement Day, when my job was looking for a job, I had to figure out, number one, where did I want to be? You know, I had to be laser focused on my location. Did I want to relocate, yes or no? What's my compensation? What's the absolute lowest I can go and still put food on the table for my family? What did I really think my true worth was? And know what I wanted to do with my skill set. Did I want to become a speaker, trainer, author? Or did I want to go into the financial industry? What did I want to do? And you have to be laser focused on exactly what you want. There's no time to hem and haw. The second thing was, you can't do it alone. As much as I wanted to take the pressure off of my children and my wife and my family, I needed them as much as they needed me when I was looking for my job. So it was important that I couldn't do this thing alone, and that I depended on former colleagues and mentors and building the right network, because I knew that people could help me if I asked, and I was willing to ask for some help. And then the third thing is, there's a book out there by Keith Ferrazzi. It's called Never Eat Alone, and it's a true decent. It's truly a great book on networking. And one of the chapters is Build It Before You Need It. I had learned that you can't expect this call that's going to come, but you can prepare for it. And because my company was taken over many years before, I had a manager who taught me the value of networking. So when I walked out the door after losing my job, I walked out with an inch-thick file of people I had already met with over the many, many years, And I simply just walked away saying, I just have to tap into my network. So the third lesson I will leave you with is build it before you need it. And just don't get yourself caught off guard.
Sage advice. Tom, you've got a remarkable story, remarkable career. I mean, we could talk for another 2 hours about some of this stuff, but where can people find you? How can people get in touch with you and utilize your services?
They can get in touch with me on my website. It's transformationtom.com. They can find my books on Amazon, either by their titles or by just look under the author name, Thomas B. Dowd III. They can find me on Twitter at Tom Dowd in the number 4. On LinkedIn under Thomas D. Dowd, on Facebook under Thomas Dowd Professional Development and Coaching, or go ahead and check out my YouTube channel, Transformation Tom.
Tom, you're a busy man. I could learn a lot from you and trying to establish my platform. I'm glad to have met you. I look forward to collaborating with you in the future. And again, thanks for coming on the show. I'll have links to all of this on your post when it's on the website.
Oh, fantastic. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We'll talk again.
All righty.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.